Hello, Russell here. I'm so excited to share some of my conversation with Dr. John Hagelin, who's a quantum physicist, a public policy expert, president of the David Lynch Foundation, head of the Maharishi University out there in Fairfield, Iowa. For the past 25 years, he's been leading a scientific investigation into the foundations of human consciousness, and that is the conversation that we have today, talking about the origins of... I mean, look, this stuff is going to knock your little socks off. If you enjoy it, please go over to luminarypodcast.com, where for as little as $2.99 a month, you can get a subscription, and it's really worth having, as I think this clip will be a testimony to. Check it out.
Trying to achieve equality with the annihilation of category is not a successful route.
Yes, that's exactly right.
We're in this era where it turns out we were never the boss.
Doesn't look like an ideology.
What's beneath the surface of people we admire, of the ideas that define our time, the history we are told?
Welcome to Russell Brand.
Under the Skin.
Why, John, is it, do you think, that most people in the, my assumption is at least, that in the Harvard Physics Department or at CERN are sort of almost fundamentally atheistic and materialistic? And is it because empiricism is the core of what they do, or why is that? Because I'm sort of reminded of other conversations I've had with sort of astrophysicists or whatever, and they would not want to be making this leap in the direction of sort of consciousness preceding matter and the theological connotations of that.
It's a really good question. One of my thesis advisors at Harvard was Steven Weinberg, Nobel laureate, and the Weinberg-Salama Electroweak Unified Theory. And he's very advanced in his field. He's written superb texts on many subjects like general relativity and quantum mechanics and quantum field theory and so forth. So he's brilliant. He really is. But he's very invested in what he knows. And the physicists are considered the high priests of knowledge of our time. And they don't want to be crossed. They don't want their boat rocked. It's like if you're the king of a kingdom, you don't want somebody else coming up and threatening some new government when you're trying to run your own. So it's very much like that in academics. Academics is competitive. People certainly believe their knowledge is the right knowledge. And when they've reached that level of esteem, they don't want to. So I spoke to him. I came up. And I said, you know what, there are indications that these deeper levels are really related to the phenomenon we call consciousness, the mystery that the neuroscientists are trying to understand. What is consciousness? Where does it come from? How is it created by the brain? Or is it indeed created by the brain? And I said, there's a link between that quest and your quest. And he says, no. He was stammering and actually very nervous. And he said, if you're right, then I'm wrong. And I'm not wrong. And he ran out of the room. And so he was threatened by not necessarily by discovering or being, and I think he sensed it was true. That was what was so disturbing, that what he has created, this edifice of knowledge that he's created for himself, might not be the ultimate knowledge, that there might be something missing from it that actually might challenge it. And if I had a time, I would have said, no, what you know isn't wrong. What you know is profound and deep, and it's demonstrably correct. It's just not quite complete. There's another angle on it which will enrich it, and it'll really become a unified field theory. Not just a unified field theory of matter, but a unified field theory of consciousness, a so-called theory of everything. And so it's a crazy reluctance based in fear that prevents these high priests of knowledge from looking at their own knowledge afresh, because they don't have to change a thing. They just have to understand what it means from the perspective of consciousness.
Far be it from me to be derisory about an accomplished Nobel Prize winning physicist, but it's plainly incomplete, because if you have a theory that doesn't include the emergence of consciousness, the vehicle or crucible or container, then what do you really have other than some wonderful?
That is exactly the point, and I think that's exactly what they fear, and that's why the word consciousness is more or less forbidden in these circles. You can't mention the word. It's like sacrilege to mention it. And here at Maharishi University, we have a physics program, and we had a nice doctoral program in physics while there was a lot of public interest in physics. We're not far from what's called Fermilab in Chicago, USA, the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory, which before CERN was the biggest and most powerful in the world. And our students would take a field trip and they would visit CERN, and they would tour the facilities, and they'd have some theoretical physicist from CERN, this is Fermilab, come out and talk to the students and then lay out reality as they see it and ask if there are any questions. And this guy who was leading this talk was kind of cocky, saying, "We know pretty much everything now. Come on, throw a question at me. Ask me anything." The very first student from Yamashita University asked was, "And where does consciousness come from in this picture?" And he just was completely taken aback. He said, "Consciousness? What's that?" And completely lost the confidence of the crowd, because what do you mean, what's that? I mean, we have it. We should be able to understand it. And it just wasn't in the picture. And that really, the joke about the whole thing was, he had been talking about consciousness all the time. He just hadn't made the connection. So it's, you're absolutely right. Without consciousness, your theory is obviously faulty. But the addition of consciousness basically just means that the unified field you've been studying and searching for your whole life is consciousness. End of story. It's really pretty easy. Everything follows from that.
What follows from that?
What follows from that is that ultimately unified field is all that there is. Everything is made of it. And that being consciousness at its core, you could also say consciousness is all that there is. But the whole mystery of mind and how consciousness emerges, I'll tell you how it emerges within the brain in a sentence or two. It doesn't appear, you could say, magically. The reason a rock is not consciousness, not very conscious, obviously, very dull, and a human brain is very conscious, is because, well, they're both made of matter, but they're both made of classical matter, and the classical matter rests on quantum matter, elementary particles and forces, and both of those emerge from the unified field. The difference between the rock is what's going on at the micro level is irrelevant. It's just the rock's behavior doesn't depend on what the molecules are doing. Whereas the human brain and the brain's behavior depends intimately on what's going on inside every neuron. The brain is a network of neurons, and the neurons are at their core are quantum mechanical. The neurons are cells which are not dead. There's a spark of life in every cell, and that spark of life in every living cell is due to quantum processes within the cell. So what happens is the cells are little sparks of life, because the cell's behavior depends moment by moment intimately on quantum reality. And then the brain networks all of that quantum process into one network giant conscious phenomenon. It basically channels all these sparks of consciousness into a macroscopic, complex, rich instrument of consciousness. So the difference is the roots of the brain's behavior, the roots of conscious behavior, go deep into the quantum mechanical realm, all the way into the unified field. Whereas while the rock is made of the unified field fundamentally, its macroscopic behavior, which isn't much, doesn't depend intimately on what's going on inside every molecule in the same way. So the organization of the unified field and the particles that emerge from the unified field in a rock is very simple. The organization of the human brain, of the, you know, the substances of the brain that also emerge from the unified field, are networked in a way that they become sensitive to quantum reality, sensitive to quantum mechanical events, and ultimately to the unified field. That's why the fundamental difference between Russell.
Yes, I'm glad that you've observed that there are some. So I understand that the complexity of our neurological structures permits us to be a kind of conduit for this limitlessness, whereas a rock remains incidental and non-expressive of this deep, unified potential complexity.
Beautifully put. Beautifully put.
Okay, if you like that and you want more, visit luminarypodcast.com to start your free trial for as little as $2.99 a month. That's for a 7-day free trial. Remember, there's terms and conditions, baby. There always are. But there's some fantastic stuff on Luminary. I cannot endorse it more heartily. Get over there now. Sign up for it. It's going to be deeply, deeply rewarding to you, your personal growth and edification. Thanks.